The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Hello, this is Suzanne Stroud for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer and the Triangle Business Journal. First article, North Carolina seeks block rate hike for some long-term care policies. Some seniors in North Carolina could soon have to pay thousands for long-term care policies, whether they agree to it or not. That's the crux of why North Carolina Insurance Commissioner Mike Causey has filed a federal lawsuit against his former counterpart in Pennsylvania, asking for an injunction that would prohibit rate hikes and benefit cuts for a troubled firm's policyholders in the state. The lawsuit against Jessica Altman, former insurance commissioner for Pennsylvania, centers on Senior Health Insurance Company of Pennsylvania, formerly known as Conseco Senior Health Insurance Company. The company, which sells policies that cover long-term care services, was found insolvent and is in rehabilitation, similar to a Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The rehabilitator, the body tasked with guiding the turnaround, is the Pennsylvania Commission of Insurance. But its plan could mean policy hikes and benefit downgrades, something Causey said shouldn't be allowed to happen. While rehabilitation order is still being appealed, officials in Pennsylvania have been contacting policyholders, telling them they may have to pay more. A document being sent out gives the elderly North Carolina policyholder until March 11, 2022, to elect coverage from the coverage choices given or suffer a default coverage plan, the lawsuit says. Causey argues that the rehabilitator does not have authority to change the company's policies and rates in North Carolina without complying with the law here. State law prohibits increasing long-term care policy premiums in excess of 25% in a calendar year. The lawsuit seeks an order that would prohibit officials from modifying premium rates or benefits without first complying with North Carolina's own rate-making statutes. In one case referenced in the suit, current coverage has no annual billable premium but will soon mean $3,767 per year, a number the son of one policyholder calls shocking in an affidavit. NCDOI did not immediately comment on the suit, nor did Altman's attorney, Denise Besselieu. Causey isn't alone. Several other states have joined in litigation in Pennsylvania, asking the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to strike down the rehabilitation plan. They argue that the rehabilitation plan is worse than just placing the firm under liquidation. Putting the company under liquidation would trigger state guarantee associations, which can pay back claims to policyholders. Causey's case was filed in U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of North Carolina. Record high gas prices dampen economic recovery. Americans are facing sticker shock at gas stations across the country, but surging global energy costs are rippling through the economy in other ways too. Airlines are scaling back on flights. Truckers are adding fuel surcharges, and lawn care companies and mobile dog groomers are upping their service fees. Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the surge in energy prices appears to be making the country's inflation problems much worse. Customers really don't want to hear it, but fuel prices are going through the roof, so we're having to charge more, said John Migliorini, vice president of Lakeville Trucking in Rochester, New York, where diesel costs have nearly doubled to about $400,000 a month. What choice do we have? I've never seen prices jump this high this fast. The company has a fleet of 30 tractor trailers that transport general freight and food products, including groceries for the supermarket chain Wegmans. Each truck goes through about 100 gallons of diesel a day, Migliorini said. Record high gas prices are seeping into everyday costs beyond the pump, adding new uncertainty to the economic recovery. Prices hit $4.33 this week after the Biden administration took steps to ban Russian oil imports, boosting the prospect of higher short-term inflation while threatening economic growth and spending and even reshaping hiring patterns. Higher energy costs are also complicating the Federal Reserve's efforts to rein in inflation, which jumped to a new 40-year high this week. Economists say the 1-2 punch of rising prices and the intensifying geopolitical crisis could put the brakes on the rapid rebound. Goldman Sachs this week lowered its forecast for annual U.S. economic growth, citing higher oil prices, and said there is a risk the United States will enter a recession in the next year. But unlike in the 1970s, when spiking oil prices triggered a years-long downturn, the underlying strength in the U.S. labor market, combined with extra household savings and a reduced reliance on oil, could help shield the country from economic turmoil. The rise in energy prices will weigh on U.S. economic growth, said Peter McCrory, an economist at J.P. Morgan. But overall, we still are looking for above-trend growth for the year. The average price for a gallon of gas jumped 13% this week, according to AAA. Overall, gasoline prices are up 38% from a year ago, according to the Labor Department's latest inflation figures. That sudden jump is creating new challenges for Dennis Coyle, who owns a landscaping business in Morris County, New Jersey. "My entire business runs on gas, cars and trucks, lawnmowers, weed whackers, leaf blowers," he said. "The simple math is that if prices stay this high, my fuel costs are going to go from $20,000 to $40,000 this year." Coyle, whose employees drive Ford pickups, has begun raising prices for some of his customers by $1 to $2 a week, though he says he's wary of driving them away. "In my type of business, if you raise people's prices, they'll just go somewhere else," the 35-year-old said. "It's really hard to know what to do." Triangle Bankers, not afraid to fight for talent at this point. They have no choice. Raleigh's newest bank, Dogwood State Bank, will hit $1 billion by the end of the year, CEO Steve Jones said. "That's just a testament to our strategy," he said. But Dogwood has a big challenge, and that's finding top-caliber talent. Dogwood doesn't turn to websites to list job openings. It targets experienced bankers, those its own executives have known and in many cases have worked with. But it's not alone, and that's the problem. Triangle banks are going after the same people, and when it comes to bankers with existing books of business, there aren't enough to go around. "That recruiting mindset, it just has to be a constant," said Stuart Patch, regional market president for Dogwood. "It's always keeping your pulse on other bankers, how they're doing. When there's a pain point, you want to be there as one of the people they reach out to and say, 'I'm thinking about making a change.'" CEOs across the country and industry say the number one challenge in triangle banking is talent, and they're not afraid to fight to fill the seats. "We're competing against other financial institutions, tech firms, real estate companies, and it is hard," said James Sills, CEO M&F in Durham, who saw a 25% turnover rate in 2021, the highest in the history of the company, Sills said. "It's getting harder as companies like Apple, Google, and Fujifilm Diosynth Biotechnologies build out major hubs in the region. The population continues to grow, making the triangle even more enticing for banks, big and small. Just this week, TD Bank announced it was entering the market through its pending buy of First Horizon National, and it too recognizes the talent challenge, as it's committed to earmark $150 million to retain employees in the deal, an unusual step and a sign of the unprecedented labor crunch. Banks across the region are stepping up their compensation structures as one way to lure experienced talent. At Pinnacle Financial Partners, Regional President Mark Carlton said they're shelling out bonuses, $83 million in cash incentives, and $31 million in stock equity grants across the country. "You have to tweak compensation as the market becomes competitive," Carlton said. At M&F, the firm increased living wages about 22% for all frontline workers and paid higher inflation bonuses. "It's working to an extent. M&F was able to fill most of the jobs it lost last year, utilizing websites like LinkedIn and Indeed and contracting with two search firms. Bankers say the lure is also about culture. something that was certainly true at M&F, which has received increased national attention in light of the social justice movement. Sills said the increased exposure certainly helped with recruitment. Applicants were aware of our story, he said. They were aware of the mission of the bank. So that resonated with people. Culture is a major selling point at Pinnacle 2, Carlton said. People are drawn to our model because of the geographic control, he said. We really don't have any micromanagement. If you create an environment where people work collaboratively and as a team, it's an environment people are really drawn to. Bankers like Carlton, however, aren't just looking for just anyone. The premium is on experience. Last year, Pinnacle hired 10 revenue producers with an average of 17 years of experience. The talent came from many of Pinnacle's competitors. Bankers said they're looking at the same people when it comes to commercial lenders in particular, folks with a book of business and a hefty Rolodex. Sills said M&F has been looking for commercial lenders for 7 months. Bankers are also pushing their employees to give referrals. Many are offering referral bonuses as an added sweetener, the theory being new bankers with internal connections will be easier to retain. Recent successes show the emphasis of a firm's underlying message when it comes to filling the seats. At Dogwood, the bank's startup narrative has attracted a handful of new bankers, such as Jason Repuno, market exec for Cary, and Jeff Hendrick, market exec for Raleigh. Both hires were examples of that precision approach Jones and Patch talk about, where executives reach out to potential hires casually before working quickly to put together an opportunistic offer. Rapuano came after serving as market executive for Cary at First Carolina Bank. Prior to that, he had been at Town Bank for more than 15 years. Hendrick said he wasn't really even looking. At Pinnacle since 2017, he had worked previously with Jones and was on the radar, Jones and Patch said. Both say they were sold by the story, a local bank growing in an industry seeing more and more consolidation. It's that story that could be key in recruiting, CEOs at multiple banks say. You have to be able to tell your story, Sills said. Otherwise, the mission won't be aligned, and you could lose your hard-fought talent to the next bank. Student donates his pizza idea to charity. While stuck in his second-floor apartment during the height of the pandemic in 2020, graduate student Ben Berman worked on his pizza recipe. With large gatherings out of the question, the pizzas had to go somewhere. To maintain social distancing, he rigged up a box with a rope and lowered the pies to his sidewalk, where friends snapped them up on Sunday nights. Berman sent any money he received to charities. I can either give away $100 to a nonprofit that I care about, or I can spend $100 on pizza ingredients and give away $500 through his earnings, he said. Good Pizza, as Berman dubbed his grassroots campaign, got national attention in late 2020. He set up a lottery to give away the 20 pizzas he'd baked, raising $1,500 at a clip for such organizations as Philabundant Dance and Project Home. All told, Berman raised $75,000 through May 2021, when with his Wharton MBA in hand and a new career on the way, he left Philadelphia for New York. On February 23rd, Berman made his biggest donation yet, handing over Good Pizza to Philabundance, the hunger relief organization. Each week, Philabundance Community Kitchen will offer 20 pizzas to the public via a drawing on goodpizzaphl.com. Suggested donations start at $20 for pizza, plain pepperoni or spinach. The charming rope and pulley system is out. Good Pizza's former delivery method can't be used, what with Berman now living in Brooklyn and about to help launch a national food-related business. Philabundance's transportation fleet will deliver the pizzas within the city. The pizza making will fit in seamlessly with other Philabundance work, including preparing meals. Philabundance offers a 16-week training course to prepare students for work in the food service industry. The community kitchen students will make the pizzas in its facility in North Philadelphia. Philabundance Chief Executive Lori D. Jones said the program could be expanded. This is just a pilot, she said. We have to see if there's an appetite for it. Inflation soars to eye-watering 7.9% over year. Propelled by surging costs for gas, food, and housing, consumer inflation jumped 7.9% over the past year, the sharpest spike since 1982, and likely only a harbinger of even higher prices to come. The increase reported Thursday by the Labor Department reflected the 12 months ending in February and didn't include the oil and gas price surges that followed Russia's invasion of Ukraine on February 24th. Since then, average gas prices nationally have jumped about 62 cents a gallon to $4.32, according to AAA. Even before the war further accelerated price increases, robust consumer spending, solid pay raises, and persistent supply shortages had sent U.S. inflation to its highest level in four decades. What's more, housing costs, which make up about a third of the government's consumer price index, have risen sharply, a trend that's unlikely to reverse anytime soon. The numbers are eye-watering, and there is more to come, said Eric Winograd, senior economist at asset management firm AllianceBernstein. The peak in inflation will be much higher than previously thought and will arrive later than previously expected. The government's report Thursday showed that from January to February, inflation rose 0.8%, up from 0.6% increase from December to January. Excluding the volatile food and energy categories, so-called core prices rose a sharp 0.5% month to month and 6.4% from a year earlier. Economists tend to monitor core prices because they more closely reflect longer-running inflation trends. For most Americans, inflation is running far ahead of the pay raises that many have received in the past year, making it harder for them to afford necessities like food, gas, and rent. As a consequence, inflation has become the top political threat to President Joe Biden and congressional Democrats as the midterm elections draw closer. Small business people say in surveys that it's their primary economic concern, too. Seeking to stem the inflation surge, the Federal Reserve is set to raise interest rates several times this year, beginning with a quarter-point hike next week. The Fed faces a delicate challenge, though. If it tightens credit too aggressively this year, it risks undercutting the economy and possibly triggering a recession. From January to February, nearly every category of goods and services got pricier. Grocery costs jumped 1.4%, the sharpest one-month increase since 1990, other than during a pandemic-induced price surge 2 years ago. The collective price of fruits and vegetables rose 2.3%, the largest monthly increase since 2010. Gas prices spiked 6.6%, clothing 0.7%. For the 12 months ending in February, grocery prices leapt 8.6%, the biggest year-over-year increase since 1981, the government said. Gas prices are up a whopping 38%, and housing costs have risen 4.7%, the largest yearly jump since 1991. Electric bills double for U.S. families as fuel costs surge. U.S. consumers from New York to California are experiencing rate shock on their latest utility bills as the global energy crisis drives up prices for fossil fuels, forcing tough financial decisions for families getting squeezed on all sides. The increase is becoming a problem for Dave Croyle, 75, a San Diego retiree with multiple health issues that keep him largely housebound. In the past, his power expenses were about $250 a month, but his most recent bill shot up to $508. He lives on a fixed income of Social Security and pension payments and said the higher costs mean his expenses are now exceeding his earnings, so he has to draw on savings to cover the balance. He'd like to have his home health aide visit twice a week instead of once, but he just can't afford it when utility costs are piling up. It's not where I want to be spending my money, on my electric bill, Croyle said. The strain from electricity costs comes at a time when U.S. inflation is already running at a 40-year high. Food prices are climbing, gasoline is surging, and housing expenses are up. All that is taking a bigger bite from consumers' wallets, especially for low-income people who were already disproportionately affected by the pandemic, according to John Drew, Chief Executive Officer of the nonprofit Action for Boston Community Development. The roof is falling down on lower-income people, Drew said. Nationally, about 21 million customers were behind on their utility bills in December, according to the latest data from the National Energy Assistance Directors Association in Washington. That number is down from a year ago, as some critical public assistance programs helped to ease financial pressures. But now, many of these programs have ended, exacerbating the burden just as energy prices are soaring, said Mark Wolf, executive director of the group. The Biden administration's expanded child tax credit, for example, expired at the end of 2021. Lower-income families have less discretionary income in their budget, so when one cost goes up, something has to give, Wolf said. Bills are likely to stay high. U.S. natural gas prices are still soaring, and tight global supplies means there is little relief in sight. Consumers typically use less power in the spring, since milder weather means they neither have to crank up the heat nor the air conditioning. But the electricity rates themselves will likely be up because of the rising fuel costs. People are frustrated with their local utilities, but the companies say it's not really their fault. New York's Consolidated Edison, Inc., for example, doesn't generate electricity, and by law, it doesn't make a profit from the power it delivers to customers. It's charging people more this year because it has to pay more for electricity. The typical Con Ed bill in January was about $124 for customers in New York City using 300 kilowatt hours, according to company data, up 23% from a year earlier. The higher bills have drawn the ire of both New York Governor Kathy Hochul and Attorney General Letitia James and prompted the company to adjust the timing of its billing cycles in an effort to mitigate pricing volatility. Power prices in the U.S. are higher thanks to a conflux of global events. As the world's economic economy started to recover from the pandemic last year, electricity demand spiked. Meanwhile, unusual weather patterns meant there was less wind power in Europe. Drought also limited hydropower in some parts of the continent, as well as in California, while Asia saw tighter markets for coal and natural gas. All those factors came together to create a mad scramble for energy supplies and sent prices soaring. Now Russia's invasion of Ukraine is extending the rally. Russia is a huge exporter of natural gas and oil, so any extended disruptions to its supplies will mean energy prices will likely stay high. Natural gas generates about 35% of U.S. power, and prices for the fuel have doubled in the past year. Demand and prices also soared for coal, which accounts for about 22% of the electricity mix in the country. Red Hat ends Russian business, evacuates Ukraine employees. Red Hat, the Raleigh-based open-source software company, said Tuesday it is halting all sales and services to companies in Russia and Belarus, a response to the Russian invasion of Ukraine that has put Red Hat employees in harm's way. Paul Cormier, Red Hat's chief executive officer, announced the decision in an email to employees saying, "As a company, we stand in unity with everyone affected by the violence and condemn the Russian military's invasion of Ukraine." Red Hat's announcement comes a day after its parent company, IBM, which also has a large presence in the Triangle, suspended all business operations in Russia. "While relevant sanctions must guide many of our actions, we've taken additional measures as a company," Cormier wrote. Effective immediately, Red Hat is discontinuing sales and services in Russia and Belarus for both organizations located in or headquartered in Russia or Belarus. Red Hat said it has approximately 24 employees in Ukraine, which has become an important tech hub in Eastern Europe in recent years. It is home to tens of thousands of contractors and employees for U.S. firms. In his email, Cormier said that Red Hat has helped dozens of employees and family members in Ukraine relocate to safer locations. Many of them have gone to neighboring Poland, he noted. However, Ukraine has barred men ages 18 to 60 from leaving the country, meaning many of Red Hat's employees can't be relocated from the country. "We continue to help those who remain in the country in any way possible," Cormier wrote. to get workers and families out of Ukraine safely, Red Hat has organized several bus trips into Poland, according to the company. In one instance, a Red Hat employee in Poland drove several hours to pick up a colleague's wife and child at the border and is sheltering them at their own home, Cormier noted. Thank you for showing compassion and concern for your colleagues and for your patience and understanding as we work through this together. Many large U.S. tech companies have also moved to cut off business in Russia as financial sanctions continue to be applied to the country in response to its invasion of Ukraine. Companies such as Apple, Microsoft, Netflix, and PayPal have all halted sales and services there, TechCrunch reported. Carry analytics company SAS Institute has also cut off sales and services to Russian companies, WRAL reported. SAS told WARL that it has no employees in Ukraine. Average U.S. gas price rises 22% in 2 weeks. The average U.S. price of regular grade gasoline shot up a whopping 79 cents over the past 2 weeks to a record-setting $4.43 per gallon as Russia's invasion of Ukraine is contributing to already high prices at the pump. Industry analyst Trilby Lundberg of the Lundberg Survey said Sunday the new price exceeds by 32 cents the prior all-time high of $4.11 set in July 2008. In today's dollars, the previous record would be equal to $5.30 a gallon, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics inflation calculator. The price at the pump is $1.54 higher than it was a year ago. Lundberg said gas prices are likely to remain high in the short term as crude oil costs soar amid global supply concerns following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Prices at the pump were rising long before Russia invaded Ukraine as post-lockdown demand has pushed prices higher. Crude prices plummeted in early 2020 as the economies around the world shut down because of COVID-19. The price of futures even turned negative, meaning some sellers were paying buyers to take oil. Prices rebounded, however, as demand recovered faster than producers pulled oil out of the ground and inventories dried up. Then the price increase accelerated after the war began. Energy prices are also contributing to the worst inflation that Americans have seen in 40 years, far outpacing higher wages. Nationwide, the highest average price for regular grade gas is in the San Francisco area at $5.79 per gallon. The lowest average is in Tulsa, Oklahoma at $3.80 per gallon. According to the survey, the average price of diesel also spiked up $1.18 over 2 weeks to $5.20 a gallon. Diesel cost $2.11 more than it did 1 year ago. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you have enjoyed it. I am Suzanne Stroud, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org.